Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We have a major hot topic to talk about, and I know you've heard about it in the news. And you say, David, is it a financial topic? Well, it is. Almost anything. I can grab almost anything and stretch it into financial topic after doing 500 of these shows for you. So here is the topic today. You've heard about it. It's called fracking, hydrofracking. And there's a lot of noise surrounding fracking. There's certainly an economic benefit. I think that's hard for people to argue with. But there are, of course, concerns about the impact on the environment. And having just visited on a vacation not long ago, British Columbia, and walking through the beautiful forest, and British Columbia wants to be the cleanest city on the planet by 2020. I have an appreciation for protecting our environment, but is there a balance? Is all that we hear about fracking true? So, we're going to get to the bottom of it, and we found an expert who can help us. Frank Vernuccio is editor-in-chief at New York Analysis of Policy and Government. His website is usagovpolicy.com. Lots of good stuff. And Frank, of course, is his own radio show, does a report, has a lot of press. A lot of people call on Frank to get expertise and opinion on this subject, as well as others. So I'd like to welcome Frank. Frank, welcome to the program.
David, it's great being with you.
Well, I appreciate your taking the time away from your own radio to be with me on mine and share with us. So let's dive right in here, because this is not a three-hour program. We've got less than 30 minutes to get into this subject, which I know you know is very complicated. Well, let's back up. Why is it such a hot topic? Here we have a way of getting at stuff, oil and these resources, that to some degree makes us less dependent on places that either we don't want to be dependent on, or that is costs us money to be dependent on, or that, you know, puts us in a difficult spot or creates stress or puts us in a position to have to defend other countries. Why the pushback? Why is this such a question mark, I guess, for people about whether we frack or don't?
David, I know you're one of the nation's top financial planners, and you do extraordinary research for your clients. And part of that research, of course, is always doing away with the fluff and getting down to hard facts. Unfortunately, when it comes to a topic like hydrofracking, there's a lot of fluff and a lot of nonsense that comes into the discussion, which really isn't based or grounded in reality. And I took a look at six of the myths surrounding hydrofracking, and found that really these objections simply don't, to pardon the expression, hold any water. One of the early things that came on board was that somehow or other hydrofracking is going to pollute the water. Well, the reality of it is that the level at which you hydrofrack is far below the water table. So there's no pollution unless, of course, somehow or other by magic, the process of hydrofracking goes all the way up beyond the water table and into it. So that myth really simply doesn't, again, pardon the pun, hold any water. The second, of course, that hydrofracking is criticized because the jobs created aren't long range or aren't long term. Well, some of them are long term, some of them are not. But let me put it this way. If one of your clients somehow won $100 million in the lottery, well, that would only be a one-shot deal, but I think it would go a long way to improving their financial situation.
Sure.
The same thing with hydrofracking. State and local governments are utterly starved for capital, starved for funding. And if they can get several years or several decades, in most cases, of benefit, financial benefit from hydrofracking, well, what is wrong with that? Again, that would be a major asset, and it's a good thing, not a bad thing. Then we're told that hydrofracking will make communities more crowded because people will move in, they'll drive their cars, and they'll patronize local stores and make everything more crowded. Again, what's wrong with that? You know, if you own a business and you're told that for the next 5 years or 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, you're going to have, you know, a 500% increase in business, your home values are going to go up. What is wrong with that? And again, there's this sort of strange dichotomy of of mixed feeling about business improvement and hydrofracking going hand in hand. And we see that it's part more of an almost anti-capitalist move than a pro-environmental move.
That's interesting, because part of my struggle to understand this area of, I don't know the right word to call it, but just this focus on the fracking and the pushback or blowback, I've just been puzzled by it because of, as you are very quickly unwinding these arguments, Frank, you know, I just have not understood it, because if you told me that there was something that's going to happen in my local community that's going to increase the number of people, let's say, for example, we in our community, my area, we have taxes on our homes. And if we were to, for example, eliminate property taxes for the next 10 years in my marketplace, that would not break my heart, because I know that that would not only benefit me personally, but that would cause an influx of people moving to the area, and that would be just fine with me.
Well, that's exactly right. Then we're told, of course, that if the process was done safely, it wouldn't be profitable. Well, I've taken a look at some of those analyses, and frankly, if some of the extreme measures that environmentalists say need to be done to do things safely were imposed on every other area of our economic activity, there's absolutely nothing we could do safely in the country, according to their standards. I gave a discussion or a talk to a group, and I mentioned a potential source of energy which could go into every American home, which could provide power for all of their equipment, their TVs, radios, gas ranges and everything, or electric ranges and everything, but that it had some drawbacks, that if it got wet, it could be a problem. If a kid stuck a finger in the outlet for this power source, he could be electrocuted. And I said, do you think that we should allow that source of power to be brought into American homes? And many of the folks there who were very pro-environment said, well, of course not. It's too dangerous. I was describing electricity. And we are getting into a standard in our country where if these standards were applied 100 or so years ago, the country could never have been electrified in the first place. So we have to look at reasonable standards to protect the environment, but standards which shouldn't prevent progress and shouldn't be utterly unreasonable.
Well, and right on that point, Frank, you know, there's this, I think, an understandable concern right now about the shipment of potentially combustible and, you know, other types of fuel that are being transported over our rail system. And, you know, that's creating some concern. It seems that with every type of resource that we may tap into to feed our ever hungry country and world for energy, that there is always going to be some element of risk to it. Is that fair?
It certainly is fair. Absolutely. There is nothing that is 100% risk-free, but we have to look again at the totality of the government emphasis on how we're going to power our future. The administration in the White House has come out against the use of coal. All right, let's take coal out of the picture, which is an enormous source of power, both for the United States and the rest of the planet. We haven't seen many nuclear power plants being built. That's going out of the picture. Now we're talking about increased restrictions on hydrofracking, natural gas, which of course could make the United States the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. So we're taking pretty much everything except solar and hydropower out of the solar, wind, and hydropower out of the picture, which leaves us with not a heck of a lot. As wonderful as solar and wind power are, the fact is, for the foreseeable future, they're not going to be able to support any more than a fraction of our real energy needs.
Well, as the politicians like to say, I'm gonna favor an all of the above approach, because
that's exactly right.
When we look at the cost, and I don't want to get too political, Frank, because I'm careful about that when I do this program. But I have to say that when we look at the cost of all of these things, there's an enormous cost of being dependent and also having to intercede. And we, of course, have no better example. You mentioned Saudi Arabia. We have no better example than the amount of expenditure, both in financial resources as well as human life, that has been put forth in the Middle East, and the enormous infrastructure that has been built there by international, multinational corporations, especially U.S.-based corporations in that region, and all of that to get that energy back to us here.
Well, David, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned a number of factors, but one of them that really comes to mind that Americans need to be mindful of is the geopolitical ramifications of not exploiting our natural gas and hydrofrack available resources. We're seeing a situation in Europe where because of the European nations' dependence on Russian raw materials of natural gas and oil, the Russians are able to do a lot of nasty things and get away with it. If the United States could counter that with supplying our natural energy resources to the Europeans, the Russian bear would be back in its cage. And I don't think anyone can talk about an environmental concern when it comes to war, because that certainly puts all the other questions really back in a much different place. So again, the geopolitical ramifications of not exploiting our energy supply really are enormous.
Well, yeah, if we gave the Europeans another, quote-unquote, another pump to use that they could tap into, you know, that would be a very different scenario there. Because right now, the Europeans, especially, you know, some of the countries right there that depend so much on those resources, as you mentioned, Frank, they're between a rock and a hard place, or between a bear and a hard place.
That's very well said. Then we have other objections to hydrofracking, one of which is that there are earthquakes that are coming as a result of it. Well, yes and no. If you have a seismometer near where a hydrofracking source is being done, it will have some readings which you might interpret as a tiny earthquake. But it's the same thing if on your block in front of your home a big truck goes by, you also would have earthquake-like readings. So again, they're taking a partially true fact, exaggerating all out of proportion, and making a problem out of something that really is not a problem.
Well, it baffles me. You can tell, Frank, and my listeners, they know I am very careful about what I say and how I interpret some of the things that are out there and make a lot of commentary about financial results and what's happening in our world. But this area just, there needs to be precautions, as there should be with everything. And use the excellent an example of electricity. Those power lines, they are dangerous and deadly, but they go over our heads or under our feet. And there just needs to be precautions in place without this hysteria, which seems to be surrounding our trying to get this energy source as a viable augmentation to our resources and bring down that cost of energy.
You bet. And of course, energy has gone up so much, and it's so much of a problem for the American middle class in particular, which is faced with enormous other costs, such as high taxes, the fact that food is rising significantly, has risen significantly over the past year, and is expected to do so again next year.
It's a very interesting and challenging subject. Frank Vernuccio is our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, editor-in-chief in New York Analysis of Policy and Government, usagovpolicy.com. We're going to grab a quick break and come back to Frank. Stay right there.
Where can you find more spin than in politics? If you said financial services, you'd be correct. Ask a stockbroker how you should invest your money, and what do you think he'll say? Ask an insurance agent the same question, and what do you think you'll hear? Unfortunately, when an advisor is limited in what he can offer, he is often understandably biased. You'll need to ask questions. Ask advisors what products and services they can and can't offer. Ask about their licensing and credentials. Remain skeptical. This public service has been brought to you by Holland Financial. We want to help you plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We have Frank Vernuccio on the line with me, editor-in-chief at New York Analysis of Policy and Government. And Lord knows we need a lot of analysis of both. And his website is usagovpolicy.com. And I want to make sure we got to all of these myths that you talked about, Frank, before the break of the myths about hydrofracking. You've got a sixth one that is often cited as a byproduct or consequence of the fracking. What is that?
This is my favorite. This is the one that says that there's a potential release of methane if we hydrofrack. Well, methane is a naturally occurring gas that's frankly produced by folks like you and me and everybody else, including cows and animals and everything else. You know, it almost sounds like a Monty Python comedy. Methane is a natural result of things like, well, flatulence. So you release methane into the air in a limited quantity, and it's not a danger. It's not a problem. It's a naturally occurring substance. And again, saying that methane is being released without understanding what methane is kind of gives you the wrong impression. And so much of the debate about hydrofracking has been based on these nonsense things which really don't pose a threat. There was a complaint a number of years ago that hydrofracking was killing workers. It was too dangerous. Well, I looked into some of those complaints, and they're typified by one which talked about two workers who were killed doing hydrofracking work. It turns out the two men were drivers driving a truck to a hydrofracking site during winter. The road was icy. They skidded off the road and very unfortunately lost their lives in the accident. That was considered a hydrofracking accident.
That I don't think you have a better example of stretching the truth than that. That would imply that they were hydrofracking right underneath the pavement they were driving on or something. You know, I want to come back to another point, Frank, which I think is really interesting. And I was thinking this through as we took our quick break there. We talk about the, and I don't want to jump around on you, but I think this is really important. You spoke earlier about the challenges in Europe with Russia and the European dependence on the Russian raw materials. And you just gave an example. Even if, and I don't want to stretch this, but even if that had been directly tied, where let's say that the workers actually were killed in a true fracking accident, hydrofracking, something to do with the equipment or on the fracking site where this occurred. If you compare that, which occurs in every industry, right? I mean, there are deaths in every industry, especially when you're dealing with stuff that blows up or things that are exploded and things like that. I mean, even in the military, there are accidents that kill people in peacetime. If you take all that and compare that tragically to what happened to the second Malaysian airline that was shot down in this war zone by whoever ultimately they're going to find, which they think is the separatists, shot this plane down. If the European side of this weren't over a barrel, no pun intended, with the Russian resources, would we be in the same spot? I know that's a lot of hypotheticals to string together, but my point is you contrast, 300 people that were killed in that plane to, yes, there are deaths that occur in these industries. It just, I don't know, it just seems to be a big disconnect to me.
David, it's an excellent point. Look, I live, work, and broadcast from New York City. New York City is filled with skyscrapers. It's said that for every skyscraper built in New York City, there's been at least one death during the process of building it. Is the solution no longer to build tall buildings? I don't think anyone would really agree with that. So when we're talking about hydrofracking or other types of energy exploitation, using the fact that there's tragically going to be some accidents on occasion as a reason not to build or not to utilize that resource would mean basically, and again, if we apply that to every endeavor of human civilization, we'd be living in the cave.
Yeah, and I can't imagine anybody wants to do that. And back to your methane, you know, I also thought about this. If we're going to go down that path of thinking, heaven forbid, I like my steak on Friday night, Frank. Don't outlaw cows, okay? I mean that if you take this, what do you call this? That logical fallacy or taking
things to their
logical conclusion. Be careful. And another thing I want to come back to, because we zipped through some of these myths. The other one you mentioned, which was really interesting to me, I don't want to miss this, is, which I hear this one a lot, probably the most, and it's the impact on potable water or drinkable water sources that the fracking can have. And you made a point of saying that the drilling that's done is far below the water table?
That's correct, very far below the water table. So, I mean, some of the objections have said that, well, you're pumping chemicals into the ground which are going to hit the water table. That's not the way it's done. Those chemicals aren't leaching into the water supply. Stuff is pumped far, far, far below the water table, so it's not really a major issue. But again, we have to compare any hazard or potential hazard is more appropriate from hydrofracking with every other source of energy we've got. And we have to come to the conclusion, do we want to use energy or don't we? Nuclear, we all know about the potential potential problems of nuclear power. Coal is a pollutant. Hydrofracking, we have to do things to the water. So we have to do things to dams and rivers and so forth, which some environmentalists say is terrible. Wind power, we chop up birds and their migratory paths. In solar power, there are whole swaths of desert areas where now we're saying that there are species underneath those solar panels which could become endangered because of the solar panels. So you have to, at some point, come to a question of, do you want electricity and or power, or don't you?
Well, let me, and I'm going to vote for power. I like having lights. Let me ask you this, Frank. How many of these big super cruiser oil tankers have they out? Do they outlaw all the oil tankers going across the ocean?
That's a great point, Dave.
Didn't they?
That's
when did they do that? I don't remember. Did they outlaw all of the oil tankers? Because we had the Exxon Valdez that destroyed how much wildlife and the impact on the communities of the oil going up on the shore and how many millions of gallons were released. I don't remember the date of when they outlawed the oil tankers, but, you know,
you're right.
I mean, you know, I'm being a smart aleck here, but all of this ties back to, and just to remind my listeners, because this is a financial show, not a Frank and David frustratingly complaining about the state of some of these energy arguments, but, you know, there is a real financial cost, and I have a term for it, Frank. I call it gas and wings, okay? Where on my way home, I have a Hess station on the corner, and right next to it is a restaurant which is well known for it. They serve beer and really, really good barbecue wings, buffalo wings. Well, if I fill up and I only have so much money in my wallet, right? We all have limited resources. Nobody has infinite resources. If I fill up, and let's just say that on a given day, it costs me $40 to fill up. If gas goes to $5 a gallon, well, do I have $40? If I had 50 and I use 40 for my gas, but if the gas costs more, maybe I don't have that $10 now to spend on the wings and a beer I want to have after I fill up.
Once it interferes with your beer money, it gets awfully
this
serious.
This is serious business, Frank. I mean, you know, we've got a frack if we want to save our beer money.
Absolutely. Yeah, again, it comes down to a choice, and I know it's being repetitive, but do you want electricity and power or don't you? And if you do, then you have to realize that the risks from hydrofracking are probably actually far less than almost any of the alternatives, and there's no reason not to do it.
Well put, Frank. Frank Verduccio is our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, editor-in-chief at New York Analysis of Policy and Government, usagovpolicy.com. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Have you considered an annuity as part of your retirement plan? Did you know that over the past 10 years, Americans put a staggering $2.3 trillion into annuities? Despite their popularity, many people are unsure about annuities. Why? Because annuities have been attacked for decades by financial folks who offer competing products or services. A lot of money is at stake. So you can imagine that financial firms who only offer investments don't want you to consider an annuity. Get the facts. Call Holland Financial to get your free copy of Annuities as Part of Your Retirement Plan. This booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities, as well as straightforward information about their costs, features, safety, and income potential. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Frank Ranuccio is on the line having a spirited discussion with me about fracking. And Frank is editor-in-chief at New York Analysis of Policy and Government, usagovpolicy.com, usagovpolicy.com. And I want to come back for a little bit of a few minutes we have left, Frank, if you don't mind, come back to close to home for you, the great state of New York, and kind of tie that into what you've seen happen in your state over the years or decades, and kind of juxtapose that with the argument against fracking, where fracking has a toll, takes a toll, or is a heavy burden, both on the infrastructure or, you know, the toll on the education systems of more people coming to the state. What's been happening in your state over, I don't know, the years or the last decade or so? What's been happening in New York where fracking, as I understand it, does not occur?
Well, New York State, of course, most people think of New York City, but upstate New York, the northern and western parts of the state, are heavily rural and have been really hit very hard over the past several decades. Industry has moved out. There's massive unemployment and, in fact, a massive population loss. New York has the highest rate of out-migration in the country. It goes back and forth between California and New York. New York, I think, currently is in the number one position. New York also has a great deal of resources that are exploitable by hydrofracking, which could literally turn the economy of the state of New York around, particularly in the region's hardest hit. It also has a very strong environmental movement, and they have lobbied the governor to not allow hydrofracking to go forward.
Mm.
The governor has appointed several commissions to study the problem. Each time he appointed a commission, they found that there was indeed no significant environmental hazard from hydrofracking. Yet the governor, who feels politically dependent on the many votes that come from within the environmental movement, has still not authorized the process of hydrofracking to take place. Therefore, upstate and western New York continue to lose population, continue to go down the economic tubes. Right across the border from New York State is the state of Pennsylvania, which has become, frankly, quite prosperous because they have allowed hydrofracking to go forward.
Mm.
So this objection to hydrofracking, based mostly on the six myths we just discussed, are causing the state of New York to continue its economic doldrums and to continue its terrible outward migration.
And doesn't New York have one of the worst individual state unemployments in the country?
It is pretty far down the road on that area. And there are certain parts of the state, in the Bronx, for example, where there's 11.4 unemployment.
Wow.
And remember, that's just the official, I believe it's the U3 unemployment number. If you include the number of New Yorkers who are underemployed as well as unemployed, the number becomes astronomically high, depression level.
Wow. And you mentioned the governor, you know, forming these commissions and getting the answer, and then, well, I didn't get the answer I wanted. Let's form another commission.
That's exactly right. And again, we've been through this process time and again. The commissions, again, initiated by the environmentally conscious governor, have told him, not a problem, go ahead with it, and he refuses to accept the conclusions of his own commission.
Well, it's an interesting subject. It's a challenging subject, and you stack that on top. What's interesting on the other side of it, Frank, and I'm sure you're aware of this, we see this in my state of Florida, advertised on television, move your business to New York and we'll give you 10 years of free taxes.
Well, I believe it was Fact Check that took a look at the governor's claims in that area and found out, in fact, that a lot of those benefits really are not all they're cracked up to be. Look, New York is desperate for industry. New York is desperate for any source of employment. Hydrofracking could produce an enormous amount of employment, an enormous amount of tax revenue for the state of New York, and it's being wholly ignored.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, I tell you what, Frank, we are really fortunate to have you come on the program and share with us. And for our listeners, Frank Vernuccio has been our guest, editor-in-chief at New York Analysis of Policy and Government. And stop by the website, usagovpolicy.com. Lots more information there about Frank and the good work he's doing and keeping us, cutting through some of this myth and confusion about hydrofracking. Frank, I really appreciate you being with us.
Dave, it was great being with you today.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.
Thank you.